This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
Time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
All right, welcome back. Hour number 2 of the Drive underway here on Fan Run Radio. Rick's got the Top 4 at 4 for you, brought to you this afternoon by Blue Water Climate Control. Rick?
All right, gentlemen, here we go. The Top 4 at 4 right now in the U.S. Open. We have a three-way tie atop the leaderboard. That would be Patrick Rogers, Matthew Wolff, and Brooks Koepka. They're all tied at 3 under par. Then you got a whole logjam of folks right behind them, too many to count almost. But some notable names: Xander Schauffele, Siwoo Kim, and let's see. Man, I actually got to say, one of the more interesting things about this U.S. Open right now is I feel like there are more new names than you might normally see.
New names. One thing I noticed: Francesco Molinari is always, you know, he's always hanging around the leaderboard and on these things, and I'm guessing this is his brother Eduardo.
I was just about to ask the same thing.
They're both Italians, according to ESPN.com, so I'm just going to go ahead and assume that they are related.
If only you could combine their scores to see if they could jump up a spot or two.
The brothers should be allowed to play best ball at the at the U.S. Open. I don't know if that's a rule or not.
Maybe only for twins or something like that, I would assume. I don't know. But anyways, that is your, again, you got a three-way tie at the top.
Looking for Mickelson, still 2 over through 12. We're following that storyline closely. Knoxville's Davis Shore, 1 over. Justin Thomas, 1 over. And, we'll see. A lot of guys still, DeChambeau, many others, yet to tee off as they play in San Diego.
All right, number 2. Guys, I think that this is another great continuation from the University of Tennessee. In case you actually got a chance to go to the Big Orange Block Party last weekend, which, again, by the way, if you didn't, it really was a very cool spectacle to see a lot of people there, especially on Saturday. Tennessee is going to be bringing it back. Vol fans are invited to the College World Series watch party Sunday at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. It says, according to UT Sports, Tennessee Athletics is celebrating the baseball team's College World Series berth by hosting a Big Orange watch party this Sunday. Admission is free for all fans. The stadium's front gate opens at 1 p.m. and first pitch is set for 2. Free parking is available and all at the garage and all other lots around the stadium.
So that's pretty cool. It's going to be hot, yeah. I think. There's a 60% chance of showers on Sunday here in Knoxville. Would they be – I know it's baseball. We want to be out at the ballpark and everything. Would it be better off having that inside Thompson Bowling if it's available? Ooh.
You know, on one hand, my natural instinct is just to say yes for comfort and for all the things wrapped up into that. But, man, I just think with the spring and with the weather, people want to be outside right now. Like, I got burnt. I look like a lobster right now. But I still would not have wanted to spend a single second inside last weekend. Baseball, outside, the environment, the summer. It all wraps up.
Are they going to have the game on the Jumbotron out in the outfield, or are they actually going to bring a screen in a little closer?
So here we go. It says right here, the ESPN2 game broadcast will be shown live on the stadium video board, and Coca-Cola products will be available for purchase, although those two are not related, in my opinion. Yeah, it'll be on the stadium video board.
Wherever you watch the game. What's that, Bear?
I said, I don't know. Come, I mean, I get, I'm old. I wouldn't want to sit out in the heat and watch it. I mean, it's just like watching TV outside.
But whether you watch the game at the watch party, whether you're making the trip to Omaha, whether you're watching it right here at Jets Pizza and Farragut, or
that would be my choice.
Whether you're watching for the comfort of your own home, be sure to tune in to Volunteer Your Action as soon as it's over right here on your free Fan Run app, hashtag app only.
There you go, number three. Guys, a couple of, I guess you could call this, postseason awards for Tennessee baseball players. We mentioned this for a second yesterday, but didn't get to really spend a little bit of time with it. So here you go. Five Tennessee baseball players have earned American Baseball Coaches Association Rawlings All-Region Team honors. Three of those Tennessee players received first-team honors, while two of them were named to the second team. Chad Dallas, Jake Rucker, and Liam Spence are all the first-team All-Region. And then you had Max Ferguson and Jordan Beck. They were your second-team All-Region. And then, again, you had Chad Dallas. He received third-team All-America honors on Wednesday. So certainly big awards going out to this Tennessee baseball team as they enter this last true stretch of the season.
Big awards for a big team. Congratulations to all those players and to Tony Vitello, his staff, for developing them, man. Job well done all the way around.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, here we go. And then last but not least, number four on the day. You know, actually, this is a little bit of a continuation of a story from earlier in the week. I can't remember who brought it up. I guess it must have been Matt. But the official Madden cover has been released. Like we all had predicted, they are correct. Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes will share the Madden 22 cover as the first time that two athletes have shared it for the first time in 12 years. My favorite thing when looking at these cover athletes or whoever the poster boy is going to be, the Madden curse. I love the Madden curse, and I love that it's actually fairly consistent throughout. So who knows? Maybe Tom Brady, maybe Patrick Mahomes, maybe they fall victim to the Madden curse.
I hope not.
Pretty cool.
Who was on it last year?
Get a father-son duo on the cover.
Yeah, here we go. I knew it wasn't going to take. I knew as soon as Rick stopped talking, we'd get a dynamite drop in from Adam Brady. Go ahead, Adam.
Like, what's funny was, I mean, people act like they had a hard time deciphering that message when it was teased that they put out two goats for the cover. Like, obviously, Brady's going to be on there somewhere.
Yeah, I find it interesting what they did. But again, I think, and you can really look back into it, like, there is a 25-year history into the Madden curse. You asked about last year's. I think that was Patrick Mahomes again.
Yeah,
or maybe that was 20. Lamar Jackson was last year, who did have a drop-off this year to an extent.
Won a playoff game, though. Got that monkey off his back.
Yeah, and I guess it's hard to – I mean, if you're MVP one year, you're probably going to regress a little bit the next.
Only room to go down.
Yeah, pretty much. So there you go.
Thank you, Rick. That is the top four at four. It's brought to you by our friends at Blue Water Climate Control. Remember, Blue Water wants to reward Fan Run listeners for showing their support, and Blue Water appreciates all the referrals they've gotten from us here at Fan Run. They're giving discounts for all services and repairs for all Fan Run listeners. If you've got any issue, we're supposed to get up to 90 tomorrow here in East Tennessee. You got any AC issues, you need to call our friends at Blue Water Climate Control. The guys who do the right repair the right way the first time. Blue Water Climate Control, 865-299-2290 is their number. Of course, they're online at bluewaterclimatecontrol.com. Russell, Barron, Rick hanging out with you here Thursday afternoon edition of the show. We're live today, Jets Pizza and Farragut. You want to come on out and hang out? It's happy hour right now. We got 250 and 350 pints for you, and we've got the U.S. Open on TV, and we are enjoying the festivities here as a lot of folks are coming in here as we move along throughout the show. Mark Nagy's going to join here in about 10 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on this remarkable Tennessee baseball run. And we will take your phone calls as well. If you want to jump in, take a shot right now. A couple lines available at 865-546-8200. USA Today has an article out, Paul Meyerberg, ranking the college football head coaching hires for 2021, all the way from their number one choice, Gus Malzahn, all the way to the worst choice at number 17, Terry Bowden. at Louisiana Monroe. Where do you guys think between 1 and 17 they would rank our guy, Josh Heupel?
10. Middle 10? Of the road.
That's pretty good, Bear. That's pretty good. Rick?
Wow, I was going to – I guess that sways my answer, but I was going to say 13.
Yeah, that's pretty good, too. 11th. 11th best hire. Meyerberg writes, Heupel accepts the toughest job of any new hire, taking the mess that is Tennessee and slowly bringing the Volunteers back into the mix for the division championship and New Year's Six Bowls. That's a multiple-year process if it happens at all. If not, the name most UT fans were expecting, Heupel will update an underwhelming offense and make Knoxville an appealing destination for talent. Number one, as I said, Gus Malzahn. It's interesting on so many levels. Number two, Brian Harsin at Auburn. Number three, Steve Sarkisian in Texas. Number four, Andy Avalos at Boise State. Number five, Lance Leipold at Kansas. Number six, Lyle Allen Butch Jones.
Dude, what is this
That's
list?
Garbage list.
At Arkansas State.
Total garbage list.
Number seven, Clark Lee, Vanderbilt. Eight, Charles Huff Marshall. Nine, Brett Bielema. At 11, 10, Blake Anderson, Utah State. And 11, or Blake Anderson was 10, and 11 is Josh Heupel.
All right.
Shane Beamer of South Carolina, number 12, by the way.
That's
you know,
I, that's just god awful.
That's fair. What's that?
It's a ridiculous list, Russell. That has no credibility
Why?
With me.
Why?
I mean, just the guy, Lance Leipold, at number five, and half the top six are the retreads.
Here's what I you have to account for a sliding scale, right? And this is what I believe they're talking about here is Tennessee should be able to make a better hire than Arkansas State, right? It's a better job,
right?
And so I think that a lot of people thought that even with all the problems, Tennessee would be able to make a bigger splash hire. They weren't able to do that. Lance Leipold is a good hire for Kansas, right? He's a better hire for Kansas than he would be for Tennessee, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to
it's
take
definitely
that.
Definitely a pretty big improvement for them.
Yeah. I think it's interesting they've got Harsin so high at Auburn. I'm not that impressed by the Harsin hire.
You know,
I
got to say
it really
again.
Got me itching, boys. It really did, the Harsin. And then the one right after that, the guy they hired to replace ours.
You know, I got to say, and somebody here, correct me or help me fill in the gaps if you feel differently, but, man, Russell, I totally hear what you're saying about the sliding scale and about how, you know, you can't compare because of what potential they could have. But I do really feel like there's a lot of instances where people just kind of choose to look over Josh Heupel to an extent. I'm not saying that he's going to come in and guaranteed to be some kind of world beater or will even revolutionize this program in a lot of ways that it needs to be. But there are a lot of times when I go back to how great he is as just an offensive guru. You go back 2018, 2019, and 2020, this is a guy who is in the top four in terms of yards per game in all of college football every single year. This is a guy who knows offense and, frankly, what is the most important part of football right now in today's day? It's offense. I really don't know. Man, I just think that looking at this list, the people that you had said, there's no way, in my opinion, he should be as far back as 11. I really do think there are, even though he's unproven at this level, there's places, man, that I just think that people are overlooking.
I think there is a feeding frenzy to bash on Tennessee and Tennessee fans. I think that's been going on for a long time now, especially since Shiano Sunday, 4 years ago now, 3.5 years ago. So I just don't think that's going to die down anymore until Tennessee does something on the field. And
sure.
It's low-hanging fruit. It's easy to take cheap shots. at Tennessee. And I'm not even saying that's what this is, but the brand is just so damaged that the only way to fight your way out of it is to go out there and do something on the field. So I kind of get that. I agree with what you said about Heupel and his offensive prowess. I think that what some in the media are thinking is, yeah, but he followed Scott Frost at Central Florida. The table was already set there. All he had to do was keep the road, the car in between the ditches, centered in the lane, and he was able to do that. But it started to slide off a little bit in win totals, and he's not inheriting the same kind of talent relative to Tennessee, relative to the SEC, than he was at Central Florida relative to the AAC.
And on that same sliding scale is competition, to go along with your own point, right? Tennessee is going to be playing completely different teams. When you got to know that you're going against Georgia and Florida every single year, it's a lot different than what UCF or Boise State or Kansas has to go through.
Yeah. Again, Kansas with Leupel. Again, I think that's a good hire for
sure,
them, man. They need to do something outside of the box. They're broken for them the way we're broken for us. You know, the expectations are different, but Leupold would have been a huge gamble here. Maybe there was high upside. Remember, we talked about that. That was a name that got bandied about. But it was a huge gamble.
If I remember correctly, you were a Leupold backer, Russell. At one point, you were kind of intrigued by the name.
I flip-flopped on it. I flip-flopped. At first, I was like, who the hell is that? Like everybody else was, just like I was with Tony Vitello. Who knows? Maybe he's the Vitello of college football. Maybe he gets Kansas rolling. It's going to be hard for them to take any more steps backwards. But
that'd be about our luck, wouldn't it?
Is there a name on this list where you feel like Tennessee would be in the top five had they had gotten this guy?
Well, yeah, man. I mean, Sarkisian, I think. Like, he was kind of the sexy name. And again, he gets the Texas job, but I think if he had gotten the Auburn job or the UCF job or something like that, Boise, Kansas, he would have been number one, right? Because there was all the hype around him last year. I still think he's going to do really well.
Really?
And as much as – go ahead, Bear.
I think he's going to fall on his face down there. I think that Texas has similar – problems to UT. They just haven't shot themselves in the foot with an Uzi about every half hour. So
I think he's going to do well if he can manage his demons. I mean, that's the expectations are high down there, but he was really good the past couple of years at Alabama, and he did well at Washington and USC before he fell off the wagon. So, I mean, there's definitely, again, high risk factor there. The other one that I think is going to do well, I think Butch Jones is going to do well at Arkansas State. I really do. I think that's just a good level for him anyway, and he'll be able to go in there. And I'm sure that he improved a little bit. I'm sure that he learned something the past 3 years in Tuscaloosa, so he can't be any worse than he was, but I just think that, you know, he's going to go in there and do well at Arkansas State.
The other thing with Butch is the pressure is going to be, I mean, just a massive amount lower at Arkansas State than it was in Tennessee. And the guy doesn't handle pressure well. I mean, he couldn't deal with the Knoxville sports press.
He's not going to have to deal with guys like us banging on him every day for 3 hours.
Oh, we'll still bang on that guy.
Yeah, but he won't
be
preoccupied with it. He won't reporting back to him on everything that's said. All right, stay with us. Mark Nagy is going to join the festivities when we continue. Get his thoughts on that, as well as the Tennessee baseball fever that is taking over Knoxville. Stay with us. The drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio.
Let's go there. Let's make our escape. Come on, let's go there.
I knew it was a mistake to invite Hickman back to produce today.
Yeah.
Is this Creed?
This is the Davy Hudson wearing off on me.
Yeah, don't let that happen.
I knew it was
I was really surprised.
Live and learn, I guess. That's
really surprised to see this in the folder.
That's on me. All right, let's bring in next guest, Mark Nagy, TDOT Community Relations Officer, former TV news anchor here in East Tennessee, award-winning author, and Tennessee sports media fantasy football champion. Mark, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Russell, it's great to talk to you. And as always, it's good to be the king of fantasy football for our league. I'd like to take this time to now thank everyone and to throw a shout out to all the haters. And like, we do that for the next half an hour or so. Is that good? I mean, I only won the championship 5 months ago, so I feel like I haven't had nearly enough time to boast.
Well, I keep forgetting, and then you send a reminder every other week, it seems. Just
yes.
I'm about to put it out of my mind.
Well, remember, Russell, I've been playing fantasy football for 25 years, and last year was the first time I ever won any league. So there's a strong possibility I'll never win any league ever again. So I'm going to get the most mileage out of this puppy, no doubt.
Mark Nagy, not one to forget to stop and smell the roses. He lives in the moment, ladies and gentlemen. Mark, are you surprised at how avidly Knoxville has taken to college baseball this year?
No, because of all the things that led up to it. You know, it's no secret that Tennessee's football program has been fledgling for quite a while. The men's basketball program, you know, it's been on the uptick, but I think everybody kind of expected a big year last year, and it didn't really come to fruition. And then baseball is really the last of the big three in terms of men's sports. I mean, they won the SEC men's tennis tournament, but that doesn't get that much run. Baseball was also the first sport where you could really get a full crowd into that stadium. And while it was only about 4,000 people, it got a lot of people excited. And I think that everything combined, the fact that Tennessee's baseball program has a charismatic and likable coach, at least likable to Tennessee fans, likable kids, at least likable to Tennessee fans. And the most important thing is that they've won at a high level. So all those factors combined, it does not surprise me one bit that Tennessee fans have latched on to this team.
How much credit does John Curry deserve? I mean, he wasn't here long, but as poorly as things ended up on the football side of the equation for him, they went really well in baseball. And in hindsight, Mark, if Davenport had just allowed him to go ahead and hire Mike Leach, I mean, I don't know that Tennessee would be contending for a championship this year, but it would be his fourth year. His program would be established. The conversation around football would be much different than it is right now, and you would have Vitello.
Yeah, I think John Curry absolutely deserves credit for the Vitello hire. I think that with the passage of time, you know, people think that everything that John Curry touched, you know, was a disaster. It really wasn't the case. This guy had extremely high approval ratings before football season popped up in 2017. And it all changed the second that Tennessee lost to Florida in 2017. The moment that happened, everybody got on Curry, wanted to fire Butch Jones, dragged his feet on that, and then obviously the disastrous attempt to hire Greg Schiano. Because that was such a mess, everybody most people kind of forget about the fact that up until football season, he was a fairly popular athletic director. And Vitello, obviously, by all metrics, has been a slam dunk hire. He knew that he needed to get some, Curry knew he needed to get somebody in here that could recruit. Vitello was very well regarded in that aspect, and the results have shown. So, and you look at this roster, it isn't like you've got slam dunk major leaguers all over the place. This is just a lot of kids. You got a few of them, obviously, but you've got a bunch of kids that love playing together. They play very hard. They play hard for their coach.
And, you know, that's why they're at this point. So, yeah, while John Curry is certainly the villain in a lot of aspects, this is one that he should get some serious credit for.
Go ahead and take a crack at what is happening in that alternate timeline, that alternate universe where Mike Leach is getting ready for his fourth season. He did gather John Curry up on the bike path down by the river for the first of many beers. How is Tennessee football going in that alternate timeline?
You know, I wonder in that ultimate timeline if Mike Leach is even still Tennessee's coach at this point. There's no guarantee that all of a sudden Tennessee's football program becomes very successful. Mississippi State has had a couple of flashes, but it isn't like they've been setting the world on fire down there either. Certainly Tennessee football over the past 3 years would have been more interesting. It would not have been boring. And, you know, you would have gotten a lot more out of what had been, what had become just a downtrodden pedestrian offense. So I think in an alternate universe, I think you're kind of looking at a 7-5 kind of program, a more consistent 7-5. I don't think you would have popped up with the 3-7 like you had last year. So Tennessee football would have been better, but I don't think that it would have been enough to make people be really excited about the direction of the program at this point.
So Jeremy Pruitt football with more entertaining and grammatically correct press conferences.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. I mean, I'm always thinking that if Tennessee football was going to be bad, at least be interesting. And under Jeremy Pruitt, it was just a boring style of football. He was not a charismatic coach. He did not have interesting press conferences, never really said anything of interest. Didn't give fans a reason to want to be involved with the program. He had his early missteps without, you know, orange and white game, did away with the autograph sessions and little things like that that kind of built up. And he didn't have the equity. I mean, certainly if Tennessee goes 8-2, 9-1 last year, you don't have an administration that's willing to give the NCAA the keys to the castle. I mean, Mike Leach, my gosh, at least it would have been interesting. I think it would have been, those press conferences would have been Derek Dooley-esque with more victories.
Mark Nagy with us this afternoon on the show. And Mark, you talk about the new guy in charge, Danny White. I know it's super early and there's no way you can make a judgment on him one way or the other, but just your initial thoughts his first couple of months, and is he off to a good start on Rocky Top?
Russell, isn't that what we do? Don't we make irrational decisions on people without having enough of a time frame to really give something a rational decision? Isn't that kind of the deal? Isn't that what we do?
We had a caller earlier this week, Mark, who said something to the effect of, it's time for Josh Heupel to stop screwing around. He can't go out there and blah, blah, blah. He's got to do this season. And I'm like, the guy who hasn't coached a game yet? It's pretty awesome.
I did he see enough from the Orange and White game? Was that his – he figure out it's like, okay, it's never going to work with this guy?
Yeah, he's going to pick it up, man. He's dragging.
I think Danny White has done fine. He's striking while the iron is hot in terms of trying to get facility upgrades. I think that from everything that people are saying, they're doing the right things in terms of finding ways to keep Tony Vitello. And while that's not a moneymaker the way that football could be, and you've got to get football in order, the PR of losing Tony Vitello after this season would have been absolutely a dumpster fire. So from all accounts, White's doing all his due diligence to make sure that Vitello's not going anywhere else. And that's, I think, extremely important. You've got a young, charismatic coach, somebody that fans are really excited about, a program that is winning at a high level with facilities that are well down the list in the SEC. So imagine what he can do when baseball is in the top 20-30% in terms of facilities in the conference. So I think Danny White's doing fine. again, with the AD, it all comes down to football. If football does well, if football's a moneymaker, if people start packing Neyland Stadium again, and they start going 9-3 and at least every once in a while beating in Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, then I think that people will be happy with his performance. But, you know, until that day comes, I think it's well early to say whether or not he's doing a good job.
Mark, you had a chance. I saw you posting pictures from one of the baseball games this past week or during the regional. I know you got a chance to go over there and experience the jam-packed Lindsey Nelson Stadium. What were your thoughts on the experience as it is, the atmosphere over there, and what would make it better as we look at remaking that stadium to bring it up to date with its SEC brethren?
Well, you know, I'm not George Costanza. I'm not an architect. So I really don't think that I'm the proper authority to say what would make this, you know, Lindsey Nelson Stadium better. Obviously, you need more people in the place. You could have gotten 10,000 easy for those regionals and super regionals. I was lucky enough to be at the Wright State game, and that was as loud a stadium, considering the size of it, that I can remember. It was one of those just guttural sounds. It's like a different type of loud. Yeah, we've talked many times over the years about the loud that 2015 Oklahoma game had. It was kind of like that in a weird kind of way. The Oklahoma game was sustained loud, but just that specific moment when Gilbert hits the grand slam. Because think about it, Tennessee fans over the years have been trained to expect the worst. They expect to, you know, have the Derek Dooley 13 men on the field situation. They expect Butch Jones to kick a field goal from the 1 yard line. They expect a Hail Mary pass from 63 yards away to lose at the buzzer. So I think a lot of Tennessee fans at that moment are expecting Gilbert just to hit into a double play. And it was the whole idea that home run. Say what you want about Lindsey Nelson Stadium, say that it's a little bandbox, that would have been out of any major league park. That was at least 430 feet. There was an absolute no doubt about it home run. And the reaction was one of just great relief from Tennessee fans because they just haven't seen very many moments like that. I had a great time. What's funny, Russell, is I almost didn't go to the game because my friend Ben had an extra ticket. And I was like, no, I've got tickets to the 6th Fast and Furious movie because they're playing for free at the Regal Cinemas. And then 5 minutes later, I remember thinking, wait a minute, I've seen that movie 500 times. Why on earth am I not going to this baseball game? And I went to the game, and I'm extremely happy that I did.
You almost went, what movie did you have tickets to?
Okay, so leading up to the Fast and Furious, you know, Fast and Furious 9, that's coming out in a week or so, Regal Cinemas every Friday night has been showing the first 8 Fast and Furious movies for free, and you get like a free ticket in the app. So I've watched a couple of those over the past couple of months, and I had tickets to the 6th one. I was gonna go to that movie, and instead, 5 minutes later, I remember thinking, no, I've got a free ticket to a great baseball. Well, it's probably gonna be a really fun baseball game, and it's a beautiful night. It would be asinine to just go see a movie in the theater that I've seen 500 times. So fortunately, I wised up just in the nick of time.
No, to quote the knight at the end of Indiana Jones: The Last Crusade, you chose wisely.
Mark, I would have kicked myself for a week.
I don't get it. The Fast and Furious. You and I have very similar movie tastes. That's where we part ways, my friend. I can't do it. I've never seen one of them, any of them.
Oh, I love them. I love every single one about them. I will hear no Fast and Furious movie slanders. For there's unintentional comedy. There's fast cars. It's great. It's the American James Bond franchise. That's the way I've always kind of looked at the Fast and Furious movies.
I will take your word for it. Mark, before we let you run, I ask you about the Lindsey Nelson renovations. What are your thoughts on the Neyland renovations that were released last week, and where do you see that project headed eventually?
They're asking for a lot of money, and it's going to take some time. They've already got some of that money taken care of, but that's a big amount of money they're looking for. And I guess what they want these upgrades, a lot of the upgrades to be happening really soon. Some of them, I guess, could start construction on the second that the 2021 season ends. I think that I remember, because I was at that 2004 Tennessee-Florida game, the Will Hoyt, and that was, I think, 108,000, and that's a level that will never be matched again, not because of Tennessee doing winning or losing, just because Tennessee is going to continue to reduce capacity at the stadium. That's not just what Tennessee's done. That's what many other colleges, that's kind of the push. They want it to be a little more of a harder ticket to sell or to get and get a little bit of buzz around it. I think some of the improvements look neat, but at the end of the day, you can have the place looking like Disneyland, but if the team's going 4-8, it doesn't matter. It's like the arms race for these colleges and the facilities, and they're like, well, in our athletic facility, we've got a barber shop and a miniature golf course and a slide. That's all great, but unless the team is winning, that's only going to go so far. So it'd be neat to have there's certainly parts of Neyland Stadium that need a much needed upgrade, but I'd be more concerned with getting some wins and losses, or wins other than losses.
He is Mark Nagy, T-Dot, joining us here. Mark, we'll let you go. I know that you have to get home. It's been 27 years ago tonight, the O.J. chase unfolded live during an NBA Finals game and a hockey match. I know you're going to go dust off the VHS tape from 1994 and watch it in its entirety.
Russell, I was at the New York Rangers Stanley Cup Championship Parade, a 21-year-old Mark Nagy, at that parade, and we get back to my friend's house in Queens expecting to have a big night out, and instead everybody sat home, watched half of the New York Knicks-Houston Rockets NBA Finals game, and a split screen with the O.J. chase, a surreal moment in the history of our country.
It was a surreal week or so, because I remember when, this is before social media, right? So we're not talking about everything constantly as it unfolds. And I remember seeing OJ's wife had been murdered, and they showed like he was being questioned by police. And I remember thinking at the time, well, man, that's really sad that OJ's wife got murdered. Surely he had nothing to do with it. I hope they find the guy who did it. And then as the week went along, you kind of thought, man, I wonder if there's something more to that. And then all of a sudden that happens. You flip on the TV and there's OJ running away, and you're like, wow, that dude killed his wife and her friend. And it was a different time, and it was an amazing evening.
It's hard to tell, not to go all old man, get off my lawn, but it's hard to explain to younger people what that was like at the time, and O.J. Simpson's position in, the American media landscape. Ran for 2,000 yards, Heisman Trophy winner, successful broadcaster and actor. I mean, he had a huge part of our country's, culture. And for that to, what would it be? I mean, I don't even want to say a current name to try to compare it to, but it's hard to explain to people what that was like. And again, it's because there was no social media. Everybody's picking it up by actually watching TV or reading a newspaper, and the word just spread. It was the equivalent of like Michael Jordan's double nickel game, and just the everything built up that night. Everybody kept calling each other, saying, hey, you got to watch this, you got to pay attention. It was so weird. It's still weird. 27 years later, it's still weird.
Can you imagine if we had Twitter that night, Mark, all the off-color, off-bad-taste jokes that would have been made, the people rooting for him, just the cacophony of dumbassery that would have led to?
Oh, no. It would have been even more of a disastrous moment. It would have been – I can't even imagine the way that it would have been. And you would have had so many conspiracy theories flying away immediately. I mean, we're now unfortunately a society that's like, we'll just believe any conspiracy theory out there. I believe sports conspiracy theories. I believe that Ewing, it was a frozen envelope. I believe that Jordan got suspended for gambling. I believe that the Penguins got, was in to get them Sidney Crosby. Any sports conspiracy theory you want, I will buy. I will give you a chance to make that argument. Unfortunately, something as serious as like the double murder, this conspiracy theories would have been going within 5 minutes of OJ getting in the white Bronco.
Well, Mark, here's hoping that he is ultimately successful in his search for the real killers. And on that note, we'll let you go. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you. Mark Nagy, TDOT Community Relations Officer, with us here this afternoon on the show. We're live today at Jets Pizza. Rick, I can't even begin to explain to you how surreal it was watching O.J. Simpson 27 years ago tonight. I was a 14-year-old freshman in high school watching O.J. Simpson, better known to my generation as Nordberg from the Naked Gun films, flee the police.
So that was going to kind of be my question for you whenever we talked about it a little bit. So you're saying you were 14, right?
Yes.
Was this something that you knew was going on and you made a conscious decision yourself to go out and look at it? Or was it maybe like your parents were like, hey, Russ, you got to get in here. This is a world event. You
it
can't miss this.
During the NBA Finals.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is when they broke into the NBA's heyday, when everybody watched. It wasn't some niche sport. Everybody was watching Hakeem Olajuwon, the Houston Rockets, taking on the New York Knicks in the NBA Finals, and Bob Costas comes on, and they split-screen it on NBC. So you've got the game with no sound. This is the NBA Finals, a huge game. I can't remember. I think it was game three, maybe. And then on the other, they've got split-screen, and then on the other one, you've got the white Ford Bronco and O.J., and they're narrating that. It was absolutely surreal.
Which one do you think you had your eyes on more? It's got to be the event that you've never really seen before, right?
It was
you're
going to
see another finals.
It was definitely the OJ chase.
Heck yeah.
You have to keep, like, from a basketball perspective, that 94 and 95 season, Jordan retired, right? So he's not playing. There's almost an asterisk next to those two Rockets championships. And the O.J. chase was just – it was one of the most surreal live – I can't think of anything
that,
like it. The most surreal event. Yes, Bear.
That night was a turning point along with the first Gulf War, but the O.J. chase was kind of a pivot point in U.S. history. That's when you started seeing – remember, it was wall-to-wall, 24-7 from there on out to the end of the trial. The whole country was obsessed with it.
That
I can't
series?
Again, explain it to Rick. I mean, it was the O.J. show all day, every day.
That series, I think we talked about it, Rick, when you were on the show a couple of years ago as our intern, The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh, yeah.
With Cuba Gooding Jr.
Of course.
Was really good because it really captured what that time was like. You can go and look that up if y'all haven't seen it. It was really good. All right, stay with us. The drive continues. We're live today at Jets Pizza in Farragut. Back with more right after this.
The Drive.
I've continued here on Fan Run Radio. Russell, Bear, and Rick. We are live this afternoon at Jets Pizza in Farragut. Oh, man, it's a full-on who's who out here right now as they start to trickle in and join those $2.50 pints for happy hour, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. daily right here at Jets Pizza in Farragut. Let's go to the phones. 865-546-8200. Andy is up next. Hello, Andy.
How we doing, guys?
Hey, we're doing well. Thank you.
I find the O.J. Simpson thing fascinating. Because when it happened, I was in elementary school, and we barely knew what was going on. Like, I'm talking, I may have been in first grade, I think. And I still remember it transcended so much that the teachers would bring out, like, they would record the news and bring out, like, a TV, and we watched it, but they made sure that it was something that was tame. We didn't see, you know, the violence or anything, but it was a huge deal, man.
I remember I was, when the verdict came down, it was in the middle of a school day, and whatever, teachers wouldn't let us watch it. And again, Rick, you have to keep in mind, this is 1994, 95, whenever that verdict came down. We did not have cell phones. Like, kids did not have cell phones in school. That was not a thing. And so, like, it happened, and I remember I walked out into the hallway after the class, and, like, word began to trickle in. Somebody had seen it, maybe somebody in the office, and they told somebody, and it traveled by word of mouth throughout the school during that class break. It's absolutely bizarre.
The eras of non-instantaneous information must have been crazy, because you're getting it all from, like you said, your classmate down the hall.
Yeah.
It was a much simpler time, I'll tell you that. I was at Long's Drugstore eating lunch when I heard about it. They had a TV on up above the, little counter, the lunch counter there. Yeah,
and see, my generation's version of that was probably more like 9/11, where, you know, social media was around, but we didn't have it on our phones. You know, cell phones were around, but there wasn't people like on them like they are now. You know,
what is what is the biggest event that has happened on social media? I mean, it would obviously have had to happen probably in the last 10 years, I would say. Because Facebook is – Twitter, there's a different immediacy to it. Facebook and Twitter are obviously, you know, the two biggest platforms. What is it, Rick?
My immediate thought actually is very recent. It actually goes back to the 2020 election. To me, that was – and I guess 2016 as well. But to me, the election stand out as the most, honestly, kind of toxic and divisive time of Twitter. Unless Tennessee is playing Florida.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the one for me, especially on where Twitter's concerned, was the night we iced Bin Laden. Do you remember what happened that night on Twitter before they'd even announced it? The Rock sent out a tweet because apparently he had a family member. I'm not sure if he was on the team or on a support role, but about an hour before the president came out and announced it, he put out some tweet like "Land of the Free, Home of the Brave," and basically, you know, broke it. I'm surprised you don't remember that, Rick, being a big wrestling fan.
A little bit, but again, it's almost just too hazy for me to try to draw any conclusions from.
Anything else, Andy?
Well, I was just going to mention that I did see another rabbit hole that I think I'm going to go down. I just saw it the other day. And like I said, when it happened, I was really young, so I hadn't heard about this actually until recently. And that is this theory that OJ's son committed it, and that he had a history of knife violence and everything, and that OJ helped him cover it up. And I'd never heard this theory before.
I think I heard something. Like that, but yeah, he totally killed those people. So
I
shouldn't
laugh
about it. It's not funny. It's not funny. 27 years.
He killed them.
Still tragic.
Oh yeah, and the documentaries you mentioned are so cringeworthy. Like if you watch them, like the 30 for 30 they did, that miniseries, I couldn't even finish it, man. It's so cringe. It's so brutal. I just couldn't even do it.
Andy, we appreciate the phone call, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon/evening. The sad thing about the conspiracy theories is, you know, the people will people just believe anything.
if it makes them intrigued.
Yeah, even I get some people, if you're a true believer, that's one thing, but they're the people who they don't really believe it, but they just like the theory. They like reading about it or watching a video about it. And it's like, if you don't believe it, that's the thing I don't get, is why would you waste your time going down a rabbit hole for something that you know isn't true, that you don't even believe. You're just entertained by
it is, yeah,
thinking about something that's not true. All right, stay with us. Hour number three of The Drive coming up. Rick's got your top five at five. We'll go open lines the rest of the way here. 865-546-8200. Hour three of The Drive coming up.
The Drive.